How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to episode number 567 of Smart Podcast Trashy Books. I'm Sarah Wendell, and today my guest is Alison Goodman. Her new book, The Benevolent Society of Ill-Mannered Ladies, is out this week, and you are definitely going to want to read the book and also listen to the episode, which I'm presuming you're going to do because you're already here. Hi. So we're going to talk about her book, but also about writing female-forward action scenes, which is one of my new favorite things to find in romances. We also talk about her recently completed doctorate, which was in historical fiction research methodology. So, you know, come for the Regency spinsters, stay for the deep dive into research. This is a very fun conversation, and it's fitting because this is a very fun book. I want to say a very special thank you to Yasmin, who is the publicist who made this happen. Yasmin, your pitch was truly diabolical. Hello, and thank you to our Patreon community. Hi, folks. If you are a member of the Patreon, well, thank you. You're supporting the show, you're keeping me going, and you're making sure that every episode has a tasty, tasty transcript hand-compiled by Garlic Knitter. Hi, Garlic Knitter. I have a compliment this week, which makes me so happy, to Kimberly K. There are currently 4 different creative projects in progress that were inspired by your kindness and your friendly nature. If you would like to join the Patreon community, it would be most excellent if you did, and every pledge is so very deeply appreciated. Have a look at patreon.com/smartbitches. This episode was brought to you in part by my favorite nerdy vitamin, Ritual. Perfection is impossible, so let yourself off the hook with Ritual. Ritual knows it's almost impossible to get every nutrient you need 100% of the time, so they've made a multivitamin that helps you complete any gaps to support your health. As I've said, I am extremely a set-it-and-forget-it kind of person. I like solutions that are easy, that I can trust, and that I don't have to think about. I really like Ritual because I never have to remember to order more. And I know what each ingredient is and where it came from and why it's there. Inside the Essential for Women 18 Plus, there is a traceable supply chain. There are 9 key nutrients in 2 capsules per day with a unique beadlet and oil formula that is patented. The Essential for Women is also one of the few women's multis that is USP verified, meaning what is on the label is what is in the formula. It's soy-free, gluten-free, vegan-friendly, and formulated without GMOs. I like my nerdy vitamin. Instead of striving for perfect health, aim for supporting foundational health. Great news, Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off during your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/Sarah to start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. Support for this episode comes from Honeylove. It is wedding season and barbecue season and lots of gathering with people season, and the time has come to do all of this as comfortably as possible. Whether you are the bride or a guest or looking for an everyday fit, Honeylove can be your new go-to for all things shapewear. Honeylove has revolutionized their design technology so you no longer have to feel like you're suffocating. And they've revolutionized the bra game, so you no longer have to deal with uncomfortable underwires without sacrificing support. I am all in favor. We have an exclusive offer just for you. Get 20% off your entire order with the code Sarah at honeylove.com. You can support the show by going to honeylove.com and using code Sarah. Now, I really like my Honeylove bra. I am wearing it right now. I never have to think about it. I never have to adjust it, pull the straps, move the side because the wire is digging in. None of that. No wires, just comfortable support. And I really like the Lift Wear Tank, which is so supportive and comfortable. There's bust support, again, without an underwire, and the fabric is so soft. The quality of their products is outstanding, and the details are so thoughtful and logical. You will feel incredible in Honeylove. Treat yourself to the best shapewear on the market and save 20% off at honeylove.com with code Sarah. Use code Sarah, S-A-R-A-H, at honeylove.com. Support for this episode comes from Headspace. Taking time for myself and quieting my mind, which is so noisy, can be a real challenge for me. But if I have learned anything in the past few years, it is how much my mental well-being needs to be a priority. Headspace is a tool in my daily routine that I value so much. When I take a few moments to focus on myself and my breathing, I find that I'm often feeling more tranquil in a situation that would otherwise really knock me off balance. Headspace helps improve mental well-being through guided meditations, mindfulness practices, breathing and calming exercises, and so much more. These tools can help reduce stress, boost your mood, and help you sleep better. My favorite section of Headspace is called Focus. There are playlists of about 45 minutes to an hour of music to listen to that, you know, helps me focus. It's in the name. I especially like how relaxed I feel after listening to one of them. Headspace has helped me and more than 100 million people worldwide. They can help you too. Listen up, you do not want to miss this. I have arranged something special. For a limited time, all of you can try Headspace free for 60 days by going to headspace.com/Sarah60. You won't find this offer anywhere else, and you must use my link, headspace.com/Sarah60, to unlock all of Headspace free for 60 days. This is not something they normally do. Headspace.com/Sarah60. Okay, are you ready for this interview with benevolent, ill-mannered ladies? Let's do this. On with the podcast.
My name is Alison Goodman. I'm the author of 8 books so far. My latest is The Benevolent Society of Ill-Mannered Ladies, which is out 30th of May. But I'm also the author of the Dark Days Club trilogy, which I like to call Pride and Prejudice meets Buffy.
All right.
And also Eon and Eona, which were a New York Times best-selling duology. And it's a kind of across genres. So I like to write many genres. I like to mash them. I'm from Australia. I have just finished my doctorate.
Oh, hey, congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm Dr. L now. And that was in historical fiction research methodology.
Oh.
So that's my kind of specialty. And, I will travel a long way for a good afternoon tea.
I believe it. Okay, now I have so many things to ask. I want to start by asking you about the Benevolent Society of Ill-Mannered Ladies. And I have to tell you that your publicist, Yasmin, emailed me back in January when the ARCs and the digital galleys became available and said, "I am thrilled to share that this spring, Alison Goodman makes her Berkeley debut with an action-packed, fiercely feminist historical mystery series with high society spinsters who use invisibility as an old maid to solve mysteries and protect other women in Regency London."
Yep.
To which I replied, listen, I have a to-do list. I have things I need to do, Yasmin. And then you send me email like this. And I'm like, well, I don't think anything on my to-do list is all that important right now. Holy cow. You really do like to combine genres.
I was
telling my husband when I was getting dressed this morning, you know, about the interview. And he's like, oh, tell me about the book. And I was telling him, he goes, wow, that's your catnip, huh? Like, yeah, yes, it is.
Yes, it is. So how do you describe this book? I realize I've given Yasmin's pitch, but is that pretty, in your opinion, a pretty accurate description of what's going on here? I mean, how many genres did you combine?
Yeah, look, I think of it as a serious romp. So there's kind of feminist themes, but they are intertwined into adventure and mystery and humor as well. So I was trying to kind of write my own catnip.
Yeah.
In that sense, you know, it was kind of like I wanted to, yeah, you know, I love the Regency era. It's one of my favorite historical periods. I think of it as like the 1960s of the early 19th century because it was such a action-packed, 10 years really, or just short of 10 years. And I do like to mash genres and it's got the kind of, what would you call it? It's got the adventure that I crave. It's got that kind of female, and I actually have been, it's been called female forward action scenes, which was kind of like surprising to me because I'd never heard that term before. But yeah, it's where the female protagonists are driving the entire story.
Which I think is a sort of a new and emerging trend in fiction. I've seen it in contemporaries. I've seen it now in historicals. I am entirely all for it. Because, I mean, let's be honest, women who are dismissed as too old to be valuable are the ones who actually get things done.
Absolutely. Well, I wanted to be able to use that kind of old maid, and I put those in inverted commas, old maid invisibility, that so-called invisibility, that kind of ability to just be dismissed, to be able to slide through that kind of the cracks of what everyone else is doing and saying, well, this is, you know, we're going to pull other women out of perilous situations. And that's what Lady Augusta Colebrook and her sister, Lady Julia Colebrook, do in the novel.
One of the things that I really like about this book, and when I do an interview, I try very hard not to spoil. So if I give any examples, it's always in the first two chapters. One of the things that I like about this book is that it has a lot of unique characters, but it also has a very unique story structure. It's almost like three acts. There's three cases that they take on with an overarching story. What led you to that structure for this book? Was that also character driven?
Well, it's interesting because the first two stories were part of my PhD thesis.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. So I wanted to challenge myself to write novellas.
Right.
That were complete but also linked. And then with the when I was thinking, well, novellas, although they are a fantastic form, they are not quite marketable yet in today's publishing world. So when I put forward the project, it was suggested that I write another novella to make a novel.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's a great structure. I really enjoyed the structure, but it had a lot of headaches associated with it because the overarch has to feel like a novel structure, but each novella has to have its own structure within that.
Yes.
So that kind of like, you know, three separate structures and then an overstructure, which, you know, was quite a challenge to handle, but I loved it. I love that challenge. So that's why it has that structure. I'm not going to, obfuscate either. It falls into three very nice television structures as well. Hello, out there. But you know, it's
hey, speak yeah, it it's, into being, speak it into existence.
Yeah.
It's ready for adaptation, Hollywood.
And interestingly, the follow up, I've decided to again change it up.
Yeah.
Just to make things more difficult for myself, I'm only doing two larger novellas. To create with the overarch as well. So it's kind of like just trying to challenge myself, but also create that kind of pace.
Yeah.
And also it's a bit of a kind of tip the hat at the Conan Doyle structure as well.
Yes, absolutely. And it allows for the immediate peril to be addressed in a way, I'm trying to avoid spoilers, It allows for the immediate peril of the situation that they're dealing with to be addressed in a cohesive way that doesn't drag out, where you're not like anxious for these people for too long, but then it leaves enough undone that you're like, okay, but what about that part?
Absolutely. If you lose the emotional through line, I think you'd lose the book, because really we're on an emotional journey. Yes, there's fun and games and there's lots of, you know, action and there's, you know, blunderbusses and all that kind of stuff. But it's all about the emotional through lines of each of those characters, those main characters. It's ostensibly a Garza story, but it's almost an ensemble as well, because we have some other very important characters as well.
Yes. Mm. Now,
I call Gus, Lady Augusta is Gus. Sorry. Yeah. So, yeah. Mm.
Now, you, along with Gus and Julia, are tackling ageism in the Regency era, which is something that is, alas, still with us. How did ageism function in that time beyond the spinster level?
Yeah, look, you know, it's a lot more overt.
Yeah.
I mean, we have it very much in our society as well.
Oh, just a bit.
But it was really, you know, women had a specific role, and this one we're talking about middling, which you call the middling to upper classes. You know, lower class women were working. They were scraping out a living, you know, mm-hmm. but the middling to upper class Regency woman was expected to marry. She's expected to produce children. And then she was expected to slide off into the background to become a grandmother, a dowager, and to step aside for the younger generation. And any other options were very limited. It was, you became a governess, you became a burden on your family.
You became a lady's companion.
Or a lady's companion, a paid companion. And those were really the only options, really, for someone who was respectable. I put, again, that in inverted commas, because the idea of women working was anathema.
Yes.
It really limited, obviously it limited a woman's ability to create a livelihood for herself.
Yes. And for her to work would be a violation of class.
Yeah, it would be a violation of class. And if anything, you know, England at that time, and I won't go on to the next bit of that, but England at the time is a class island. It was an island of class.
I think it still is.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I think it's still alive and well.
It's very much there, you know, and to be very important, because I think that both Australian and American societies are very much, we take social mobility for granted.
Yeah.
There was no social mobility. You know, you were given your place in society by God. And that's where you stayed in the early 19th century. That was the belief.
Yeah.
And to actually move beyond that was to go against God. So you can see that there was many, many constrictions on people moving beyond where they were.
Yeah. And that's something that affects Gus in the story. She is also harboring a crisis of faith, because she doesn't necessarily believe in a benevolent, caring God anymore, even though that religious element to their class is very present and requires, you know, go to church, be seen, be social. The church element of class and society is very much present in her life, and she feels very ill-fitting there too, which is really heartbreaking to read.
Yeah. It's interesting, because when I look for the threads of character. Because writing an early 19th century woman, the mindset probably is so far from our own now, because of just the way society has developed and history affects us, and even just the way that we are nourished, really, because we live longer, we have other expectations in the world. So trying to get into that early 19th century mindset, I follow threads. Because I want my characters to be accessible to my modern reader, mm-hmm. but still have that authenticity. Mm-hmm. So when I was thinking about Gus's apostasy, I thought, well, is that reasonable? Is that feasible for me to write that character? Because I wanted her to be an outsider to a certain degree, because the outsider has a more objective look, if you like, of her own society.
Yes.
And what I found, of course, was that atheism was on the rise then. And in fact, Shelley, the poet, was expelled from university in 1811 for writing about atheism.
Yikes!
Yes. So those are the kind of threads that I look for so that I can get those kind of modern ideas and modern thoughts and modern values into my characters who are based in the early 19th century.
Wow, that's really interesting. Laura, who reviews for me, to add yet another continent, Laura is in South Africa. So we're going to try to involve people from every continent in this podcast. Laura read this and has reviewed it and absolutely adored it. She adored this book. It just absolutely lifted her whole month. And she wanted me to ask about Gus and Julia's brother, because he is sort of cast as their foil. He's the voice of society around them, telling them, you know, everything you're doing is inappropriate and wrong and you should stop. Why did you choose a family member for this role and not someone outside the family?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I did this because it's a really good question. So thank you, Laura. And thank you very much for liking my book so much. It's lovely. I did that because they are obliged to listen to him by the precepts of that society. He is the head of their family because he is the male. He is the heir to their father's estate.
Yeah.
And he's also familiar bonds were very important. Connections, yes. Family connections were extremely important. So I felt that, you know, he has to be someone, or what was needed was someone who they had to listen to, even though they didn't want to listen to. And even though, I mean, Gus had some very strong views about her brother.
Mm-hmm. Just a few.
Even if they do have those views, they are obliged to receive him.
Yeah.
Listen to it. So that was part of it. But also just to see the inequity in that family.
Yeah.
That was set down by law.
Yeah.
And also the dynamics of a woman in a family who was more suited to the role that her brother has taken,
yeah,
and how that affects her as in her character.
Oh yeah,
what that does to her. So, I've also had a lot of fun with Duffy. That's their brother Duffy. He's a fun character to write. And he is representative, I think, of all the pomposity.
Yes, takes himself extremely seriously.
Oh yes, yes.
Now, I want to ask you more, if you don't mind, about your PhD. And you said your PhD is in the methodology of research for historical fiction. Is that right?
Yeah. I zeroed in on a particular kind of historical fiction research, which is, I call it kinesthetic research, but people can also call it immersion and things like that. Or walking the ground. That's another way of about it. So it's about going to the contemporary site of your historical setting and literally walking around trying to absorb the sensory information and the spatial information, and also the emotional and political senses of a space, because every space that we go into has these layers in them.
Absolutely.
And, you know, just in walking down the street, there are ways of walking, you know, that would have been different in those days. A woman would never have been on the outside of a footpath. A man would always walk to protect her from the splashes from the horses and the carriages and things like that. There were spaces that women were not allowed to go, you know, and that were things like St. James's. There's a St. James Street, I think it's called, or but that's where all the men's clubs were at that time. And to be seen going into that area was to be wanton.
Yeah.
Brazen.
Yeah.
I did my research.
Yeah.
Or most of it. And then COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly the assumption that I'd made for my PhD was that one can always travel. One can always travel internationally or domestically. Shut down. It was just, no, this is a privilege. This is a huge privilege. Mm-hmm. And so I needed to work that into my thesis about how this, I mean, the research itself is privileged because, you know, there's a certain amount of ableism in there. You know, there's a lot of financial outlay. There's also a confidence outlay as well, in the sense that, you know, if you are starting out as a writer, you may not feel confident enough to go up to people and ask for information and things like that. So there's a whole lot of areas that I needed to address that COVID brought home to me.
Wow.
And I was able to also interview a number of historical fiction authors about, because the people who use this methodology, why they use it, when there's a plethora of internet resources that people can just use, like Google Maps and things like that.
Right.
So, yeah, there's this kind of, there's also a respect aspect to the methodology, an honouring of the past and of the people of the past.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it was a, I mean, I know that a lot of people, you know, are often kind of have a horrific time during a PhD. I had a ball my PhD, yeah. And, yeah, it was, yeah, even though I was in lockdown, Melbourne, where I live, had one of the longest lockdowns.
Oh, it was long and it was intense. I have friends in Melbourne it was no joke.
Yeah, it was intense. But, you know, I was paddling around happily in my Regency novel and my research. so, you know, I was, that time was, although intense in many different ways, it was also an intense creative period for me as well.
And a wonderful escape too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And I managed to get most of my research done. And what I didn't, I was able to use as a counterpoint. What happens when you can't get to the place that you wanted to walk the ground? How does that affect your writing? So yeah, it was great.
So how did you manage that? I mean, I know with Google Maps, you can like land yourself in a virtual area and walk down a street.
But
you're also writing about things that don't exist anymore. Like correct me if I'm wrong, but there are no, thinking of an early example in the book, Vauxhall Gardens doesn't have any remnants of itself, does it? Is there anything left of it?
Interestingly, there is a park where some of Vauxhall Gardens were. So Vauxhall Gardens was a great pleasure garden.
Yeah.
It was quite large. And where Vauxhall Gardens now sits, I believe MI5 there, the building, that kind of stuff. You know, why not?
Story checks out. Why not?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
It was a lot of things going on under cover of darkness. It fits.
They just slid in there. Yeah. the most non-secret headquarters in the world, you know.
Yeah.
The Vauxhall Gardens area does have a park, but they've also rebuilt the Orchestra Tower.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah. So you sort of get a feel for the kind of, yeah, that's what you go. Well, that's what walking the ground or kinesthetic research is about. It's about casting your mind and through your character. So that's the main thing: is you are casting through a character. So that is a, like an embodied character in that space.
Yeah.
So I would walk that area thinking, how would Gus walk in this area? You know, and she's considerably taller than I am. What does that mean? She can't go here, but she can go there. What would she be thinking? You know, yeah. So those are the things that are running through your mind. And it's quite a quite intense experience, but yeah, very useful.
That's fascinating. So what did you do to do your research with COVID and not being able to travel? What were some methods you used?
Yeah, look, you know, it goes back to books.
Yeah.
Books, looking at pictures, maybe finding someone who's there on the ground who can do things for you. I did feel that I had to work a lot harder to get the descriptions for those areas that I hadn't been to as much. I'd been to most of the areas, but I'd only been there prior to the idea for the book. Therefore, I hadn't been embodied in the character when I was there.
Yeah.
So I had to rely on my sensory experiences, not what I would have been imagining through a mindset. So yeah, it felt like there was a lot more to do around that.
Yeah. It's a lot more work to build that sort of deep grounding in that particular reality.
Yeah.
So what are you working on right now?
I am working on the second.
Yay!
Second Ill-Mannered Ladies book. And that's coming along very nicely. Thank you very much.
Yay!
The title is kind of slightly in limbo at the moment, definitely the series is the Ill-Mannered Ladies series.
That's fantastic. Ooh, exciting. Now, I always ask this question, what books are you reading right now that you would like to tell people about?
You know what's happening in Australia at the moment is we're getting a great run of very, very good Australian crime novels written by women.
Ooh.
Yes. So, and there's, I think you may have come or heard about Jane Harper, who wrote Dry. My own friend who won the Ellen and Unwin unpublished manuscript with her novel is The Unbelieved by Vicky Petratus, a more kind of lighter toned one, but with a fascinating structure, is The Woman in the Library by Solari Gentile.
Yes.
So fabulous reading there. When I'm deep in my writing, I don't go outside what I've read before. I read books that I know are great, well written, that I can enjoy again. So I'm a rereader.
Oh yeah, me too.
Yeah. So I'm reading the Thursday Murder Club series again because they are so much fun.
Yes.
Yeah. And I'm writing, I suppose you'd call it, mine's not very cozy because there's a lot of quite hard, gritty things in it,
right?
But it's got a cozy feel in the sense that it's humorous and there's a lot of adventure and things like that. So that's what I think of the Thursday Murder Club, is like the epitome of cozy crime. What else am I reading? Always research.
I love listening to books that I've read and enjoyed as a form of rereading. Because I hear things differently than when I read them. And I'll notice different aspects of the story when I hear it versus when I read it. So I have done a lot of rereading and re-listening this year too.
Yeah. What's your favorite one that's been popping up?
I'm currently re-listening to the Veronica Speedwell series by Deanna Raeburn, which is Victorian mystery with a long romance through all of the books. She's also a lepidopterist. She travels the world and collects butterflies. So she's like Gussie, very independent and functions outside of normal structure, but in the Victorian era where they were super uptight about that kind of thing. It's very good. So where can people find you if you wish to be found?
I would like to be found.
Okay, yes.
And you can find me on Instagram, which is Alison Goodman Author.
Yeah.
And that's Alison with one L. And I'm also on Facebook, Alison Goodman Author page. I sometimes visit Twitter, but not often.
Yeah, it's burning itself to the ground very slowly. So
yeah,
everyone's going elsewhere.
Yeah. So occasionally, I but mainly Instagram. But also, I have a website where I put events and things like that. So that's at alisongoodman.com.au.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for doing this interview. I've really, really enjoyed speaking with you. And congratulations again. It's not the average writer who takes their PhD thesis and then turns it into a whole book series. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was great fun. And yeah, as this interview has been. So thank you very much. It's been great.
It's been a pleasure.
And that brings us to the end of this week's episode. I will have links to all of the books and all of the things. Never fear. They will be in the show notes at smartbitchestrashybooks.com/podcast. I always end with a terrible joke, and this week is no exception. This joke comes from Varian in the podcast Discord. Did you know that if you join the Patreon, we have one of the most lovely, welcoming, and beautiful Discords? I mean, I'm biased, but it's wonderful. It's another reason to join the Patreon. But Varian provided this joke, and this joke is outstanding. What is the best time of day? Give up? What's the best time of day? 6:30, hands down.
Thank you, Arian.
Yes, I did torture my family with that joke. On behalf of everyone here, we wish you the very best of reading. Have a wonderful weekend, and we will see you back here next week. Smart Podcast, Trashy Books, is brought to you by the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more outstanding podcasts to subscribe to at frolic.media/podcasts.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.